Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Francine Foss and Lynn Wilson. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology specializing in the treatment of lymphomas. Dr. Wilson is a professor of therapeutic radiology and an expert in the use of radiation to treat lung cancers and cutaneous lymphomas. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This week, Dr. Wilson is joined by Dr. Harriet Kluger. Dr. Kluger is Associate Professor of Medical Oncology and a member of the Yale Cancer Center Melanoma Program. Here's Lynn Wilson.
Let's start off by having you tell us a little bit about what melanoma is.
Melanoma is a cancer that arises in the pigmented cells, mostly of the skin, but also other parts of the body. So it can start also from the mucosal surfaces inside the mouth, inside the nose, in the perianal or perivaginal area. And it can also originate in the eye, from the pigmented cells in the eye.
Let me hear a little bit about, tell our listeners about your background and how you became interested in this field. How did you become interested in medical oncology? Tell us about your training and how it brought you to this point.
Gosh, well, it was kind of a long road and a number of personal instances that led me down this path. But I did start off working as a general internist after I finished my training. And I did that for about 3 years and then decided that I wanted to be an oncologist. And the main reason for that decision at the time was that big discoveries were starting to be made in oncology. So when I trained as a medical student in oncology, there really wasn't very much to offer patients. We could give them chemotherapy. Obviously, radiation was always an option. But we had very few curative options. And I think the main reason was because we didn't understand enough about the basic biology. So in the early 90s, a number of big breakthroughs occurred in different malignancies, and drugs were developed to target certain changes that happened in cancer cells. And those started to lead to improvement in quality of life and duration of life, and actually improvements in the cure rates as well. So I really wanted to be a part of this big change in medical care, even if I can only play a small part.
And how did your interest in melanoma develop?
Well, for a number of reasons. Firstly, there was a huge unmet need in melanoma. When I finished my training here at Yale in medical oncology, there were very few people nationally who even focused on this disease, probably around 20 or so. And every time one went to the national meetings, the melanoma hall was empty, whereas the breast cancer and prostate cancer halls were all full. So clearly there was a lot to be done. There was also nothing to offer those patients at the time. And I really became convinced that this was an opportunity to play, even again, once a small role even, in making a big change in this field.
Now, I know you're a melanoma expert. Are there other types of malignancies or cancers that you have expertise in, patients with other types of oncologic diseases that you help?
I do. So I do treat a few patients with breast cancer, and I also treat patients with kidney cancer. The main reason for the kidney cancer is because some of the therapies that we give for melanoma are the same as those that are given for kidney cancer. So even though the diseases start in a completely different organ and the clinical course is very different, these two diseases tend to respond well to immune-based therapies, and therefore disease units are formed around kidney cancer and melanoma together, and that's why we treat both of those cancers together.
And do we have any understanding about why these types of cancers seem to be responsive to immune-based therapies compared to other types, for example?
So we're starting to understand a lot of things about the cancer cells and how and why they suppress an immune response. The truth is, though, that there probably are other malignancies that are going to be responsive to immune therapies, but just historically, immune therapies have been developed against melanoma and renal cell primarily. But as these drugs are further along in development, we're now starting to find, for example, that they sometimes work in ovarian cancer, lung cancer, prostate cancer, and other diseases as well. So a lot of this hypothesis that melanoma and kidney cancer are the most immune responsive malignancies is actually just historical.
I see. Are there different kinds of melanoma, different varieties?
So yes, melanoma, as I said, can be divided into a number of different subgroups. So one way of dividing it is by the origin or the cell of origin. So melanomas can arise in the skin. Those are called cutaneous melanomas. They can arise, melanomas that arise in the palms or the soles of the skin, which are non-sun exposed areas, are called acral lentiginous melanomas. You can also get them under the nail beds. You can have mucosal melanoma that can arise, as I said earlier, either from the mouth, the nose, the anus, or the perivaginal area. Occasionally, we even see them in the esophagus. And then ocular melanoma is a melanoma that arises from the eye. Then among the cutaneous subtypes, there are different varieties as well that kind of depend on their look, their appearance. And now we're starting to have molecular classifications. So some of the melanomas have mutations in gene A and others have mutations in gene B, and we're going to be having a whole bunch of new names for these diseases as we move forward.
And with that information, does that help you determine a therapeutic course for a patient, a different prognosis for that patient if they have certain molecular markers or a certain type of melanoma?
So absolutely. The clinical behavior of the different types of melanoma, depending on their site of origin, is very different. So for example, if melanoma in the eye does spread, it'll tend to spread to the liver. It doesn't go to the lymph nodes, mainly because there are no lymph nodes that drain the eye. Mucosal melanoma has different patterns of spread from from the regular skin melanomas. So just based on the cell of origin, the differences in prognosis, and there are differences in patterns of spread. When you get to the molecular subtypes that we're starting to develop now, for example, melanomas that harbor this mutation in a gene called BRAF will tend to have a worse prognosis if they're not treated with drugs that target the BRAF, the mutated BRAF molecule. So there are prognostic implications there as well as therapeutic implications.
Who do you think is most at risk for melanoma? Is it people who spent a lot of time in the sun when they were younger? Are there genetic predispositions? Are there risk factors that can be considered by people and they can decrease their risk by avoiding sun exposure, for example?
Absolutely. So you actually just mentioned the two most common risk factors for melanoma. So it's genetics and sun exposure primarily. And it's not just sun, it's all kinds of UV radiation. So that includes tanning parlors. So certainly when it comes to sun exposure, that's something that a person can modify. Obviously it's a little difficult for people to change their jobs or where they live. But if you already have a job that entails a lot of outdoor work or live near the equator, dressing probably makes a huge difference. So the Australians have been the best at really trying to modify the behavior of their nationals. There were a lot of ads on the national TV and in the newspapers about not going to the beach in the middle of the day, using sun protection, using sunscreen, using protective clothing. So clothes that have SPF 50 when they go down to the beach, cover themselves, not walk around just in the bathing suits. And the Australians are the only country, as far as I know, that have actually succeeded in decreasing the incidence of melanoma. In other countries, it's still going up.
Now, so, I know that sunscreen, for example, might help somebody prevent from getting a sunburn. Does the use of sunscreen actually help decrease the risk of melanoma?
So it helps to decrease the risk of melanoma, but it doesn't eliminate it completely. There was a study done in Australia recently where they gave some people sunscreen for free and were told to apply it a couple of times a day, and the other people just applied sunscreen as they felt was right, and there was a decrease in the incidence of melanoma. So certainly it decreases the incidence. It definitely decreases the incidence of basal cell and squamous cell dramatically. It's slightly less effective for melanoma. But when we have patients who are at high risk for melanoma based on their genetics, so people who've got red hair, blue eyes, freckly skin, people who are unable to tan, we suggest that they use sunscreen as their last line of defense against the sun. So they're still trying not to go out in the middle of the day, to wear broad-brimmed hats, not baseball caps, long sleeves, long shorts, and so on, and only when they have to be in the sun and only in those areas that are necessary to expose to the sun should they use the sunscreen as this form of protection.
Do we see differences in terms of, do we see epidemiologic differences? Men more than women, different, is there a certain age group that's affected? And how about race? How does that play into this?
So yes, we see it's much more frequent in fair-skinned individuals. You do see it in African Americans and in Hispanic people, but it's normally on the palms and the soles, although not always. So certainly much more frequent in fair individuals. It used to be more common in men than in women. That's starting to change, and we're particularly seeing an increase in the incidence in young women, and particularly on the legs. The thought is that that might be because of the use of tanning parlors. So that's shifting too, and maybe 20, 30 years ago, men were more exposed because of occupational differences, and that also is starting to change.
I see. Now, how do you make this diagnosis, and are there screening programs? Is screening effective for this?
So screening appears to be effective. We do think that when we catch it earlier, there is a decrease in the likelihood of developing metastatic disease, although that's still being studied. It certainly increases the number of diagnoses when we screen, so that may be one of the reasons why we're finding more and more. But a lot of melanomas are picked up on routine screening exams. Other cases, it's because the patient feels that a lesion is tingling or it's changing color or it just looks odd for no good reason. There are a number of criteria that are applied by dermatologists to assess how suspicious a mole is. We call it the A, B, C, D, E, and there's now an F criterion. So A is for asymmetry. B is for border, so border that becomes irregular. C is for color, so changing color. D is diameter over 5 millimeters. E is for evolution or elevation. And F now stands for funny looking.
I see. So, and what needs to be done during a screening? Are there tests that a patient needs or scans that need to be done? Or is it as simple as a full body skin examination?
It's a 5-minute full body skin examination. The dermatologists are starting to develop dermatoscopes, which are fancy machines to look at changes, and they can in big magnifying glasses. They can sort of see molecular changes through these dermatoscopes, but they've not been FDA approved. They haven't been completely proven to be beneficial in early detection. So for now, we're relying primarily on the dermatologist's eyes and experience and patient reporting. But all in all, it just takes a few minutes.
So once we have a patient, once we've identified somebody with something that we're concerned about, or perhaps the patient says, hey, I've got this mole, it looks irregular to me, it's changed, I'm worried about it, what happens next?
So the most common thing is that the mole gets biopsied. It can be biopsied in a number of different ways depending on the location and how big it is. The biopsy specimen is sent off to a pathology lab, and if it's malignant, the patient then needs to have what we call a wider excision, so that if there are rogue cells that have escaped from the tiny little tumor, those get cut out in the wider excision, and that's normally done by a specialized surgeon.
I see. And the procedure is typically done in the doctor's office as an outpatient, these biopsies?
The initial biopsy is done in the outpatient setting. The wider excision is typically done in an operating room. Depending on the depth of the melanoma or how deep it's invaded into the skin, we sometimes take a few lymph nodes to see if melanoma cells have spread to the lymph nodes as well. And when that's done, it requires full anesthesia.
I see. So once we have this diagnosis, what are some of the treatment options that run through your mind for a patient?
So depends on whether the melanoma is spread or not, primarily. Melanoma that's localized just in the skin, we simply excise it and we don't need to do anything further. If it's a very deep melanoma, we'll look at the lymph nodes. If the lymph nodes are negative, sometimes we'll do a CAT scan or chest x-ray just to make sure that nothing is spread, and we may do imaging periodically as we follow a patient. If a melanoma has spread to the lymph nodes, it's somewhat controversial as to whether we should give immune therapy to kind of increase the likelihood that any rogue cells that got to other lymphatic nodes that haven't been removed gets treated. And if it's spread to other organs, where it's caught either by CAT scan or because a patient has symptoms, then we do have to give therapy in an oncologist's office.
We're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about melanoma with Dr. Harriet Kluger.
Breast cancer is the most common cancer in women. In Connecticut alone, approximately 3,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year. But there's new hope. Earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and novel therapies provide more options for patients to fight breast cancer. Women should schedule a baseline mammogram beginning at age 40 or earlier if they have risk factors associated with the disease. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, breast cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as Yale Cancer Center, to make innovative new treatments available to patients. A potential breakthrough in treating chemotherapy-resistant breast cancer is now being studied at Yale, combining BSI-101, a PARP inhibitor, with the chemotherapy drug irinotecan. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Lynn Wilson, and I'm joined by my guest, Dr. Harriet Kluger, and we're discussing melanoma. So, Harriet, we had just talked a little bit about therapy, especially for patients with a localized melanoma. Can you tell us a little bit about the possibility of melanoma spreading somewhere else? And what are some of the things we get concerned about, detection of that? How do you manage that?
Yep, so that's a complex question. Typically, patients who've had their melanomas excised get followed afterwards, and sometimes we scan them to look for metastases. When we do that, we think that we do actually improve outcome. Sometimes we detect the metastases when someone has symptoms. So the way these metastases are detected really depends on where they are and how big they are. So, and the treatment is also determined by that as well. If a patient, for example, has a primary melanoma from the skin or even a skin and lymph node removed, and then 10 years later we have a single metastasis in the lung or the liver or another place, we may sometimes either remove it surgically or, depending on where it is, we can even radiate it. Sometimes patients then do well for a long period of time after that. If there are two metastases, we can also consider doing that. But once there are more than two, we have to do what we call systemic therapy, which means therapy that goes everywhere to all parts of the body. We have two major types of systemic therapy. Actually, I should say three. One would be chemotherapy, which is what we used over the years, and that's sort of non-specific, non-discriminant therapy. It does work in a small subset of patients. The problem is that the duration of tumor shrinkage isn't all that long, so it doesn't work forever. Then we've got immune-based therapies, in which we rev up the immune system to attack the melanoma. Then we've got a third class of therapies called molecular-targeted therapies, where we target molecules within the melanoma cell. So when I spoke earlier about these mutations, we can sometimes drug those mutations and turn off the whole cancer cell machinery a little bit.
Can you talk to the listeners a little bit more about fundamentally how some of the immune-based therapy actually works? What's it doing to our bodies to try to fight these cells?
So most of the immune therapies rev up the immune system in a variety of ways. So, for example, you can rev up T cells with a drug called interleukin-2, which we've actually had around for a couple of decades. There is a subset of melanoma patients who responds very well to that, and sometimes we've even seen cures. There were patients treated in the early 1990s with high-dose interleukin-2 who've not had a recurrence. So it almost fools the body into thinking that it has a really bad case of the flu, and people feel like they've got a bad case of the flu, and then the immune system will attack the melanoma cells. In recent years, we've gotten a little smarter at doing that and at manipulating the immune system. There was a drug called ipilimumab. I'm not joking. That's really the name. The trade name is Yervoy. That was just approved by the FDA in March of 2011 for treatment of metastatic melanoma. And this was really based on very clever science. Basically, a molecule called CTLA-4 was shown to put the brake on T cells. And if you inhibit this CTLA-4 molecule, you can have a continuous response of T cells. So you almost you fool the T cells into thinking that there's a bacteria around all the time, and they remain activated. So they sometimes, and in a nonspecific fashion, then they can become active against the cancer cells. The problem with this approach is that we also get what we call autoimmune disease. So the immune system can start attacking parts of one's own body, and people can get diarrhea and hormone problems and things like that. So those can be difficult to manage, but certainly if you weigh up what we call the risk-benefit ratio, in other words, the benefit of the treatment versus the risk of getting one of the side effects, the risk-benefit ratio certainly favors trying this treatment in patients with melanoma that's spread.
And does it seem to be equally favorable regardless of the molecular profile of an individual's problem?
That's what we think so far, but the jury's still a little bit out on that. We're also trying to modify this approach. So there's a new molecule that's now being tested in the clinic there's a new target that's being tested in the clinic called PD-1, which is also found on T cells. It's also one of the brakes on T cell longevity and activity. An antibody that blocks that molecule is being used now. We've used it for a couple of years and we're seeing good responses there too. We're starting to combine drugs. We're starting to combine these drugs with radiation. So for example, if you use ipilimumab or the CTLA-4 blocking drug together with radiation, when you radiate, you have the melanoma cells start to secrete proteins into the blood system. And some of these proteins are specific for the melanoma cells. So it can almost sensitize the immune system even further to attacking the melanoma cells. So a lot of different modifications are kind of ongoing of this approach. But this is really a new paradigm in cancer therapy, in fact. And other diseases are also, we're also starting to study it in other diseases, lung cancer in particular, and obviously kidney cancer as well.
Yeah, so it's fascinating. When you have a patient, when you're faced with the dilemma of a patient who's had a metastasis of their melanoma, are certain sites of the body more difficult to treat than other ones?
So yes, not all sites are equal. Sometimes the melanoma can metastasize just in the skin, and those are, for example, relatively easy for us to treat. Sometimes we can treat it with cream only. Immune-stimulating cream, basically. If it goes to lymph nodes, like I said, sometimes we can resect it, whether it's in lymph nodes or lungs or certain locations. I would say that the brain is a slightly unique location in that there are two problems there. Firstly, if a tumor grows from a small size, depending on where it is in the brain, it can actually cause symptoms. So we don't have a lot of wiggle room over there. The other problem is that sometimes drugs don't get into the brain, whereas they might get into other sites of the body. So over the years, it was considered a difficult site to treat. But there too, we've made a lot of progress in recent years. So improved imaging, particularly MRI scans, enables us to find these brain metastases when they're really, really small and not causing any symptoms. And if we do high doses of radiation, it's called gamma knife therapy or stereotactic radiotherapy, we can actually cherry pick at these tiny little brain metastases and treat them when they're very small. And oftentimes patients do really, really well for a long time. And it's not the brain metastases that become a problem.
I see. We hear the term multidisciplinary approach for patients with cancer and other diseases. Tell our listeners what that is and why it's important.
So when patients have a particularly metastatic disease, sometimes it's a little bit of a dilemma how to approach the patient. So should we start off with the systemic therapy? Should we radiate first to get antigen release, as I mentioned before, or should we do surgery? Sometimes we have to use more than one approach in combination. So we have a multidisciplinary team of people that focuses on melanoma. This includes pathologists who might be able to help us determine whether it's one kind of melanoma versus another. Sometimes we don't know what the origin of the melanoma was. They help us understand the mutations and help us with determining systemic therapy based on these mutations. We have radiologists who specialize in melanoma and can often tell us if something looks like a melanoma metastasis versus, let's say, a new lung cancer. We have surgeons who really focus on this disease, as well as radiation therapists and medical oncologists. Now that patients with metastatic melanoma are living longer, we've also started to incorporate a neurosurgeon and neuroradiation therapist who help us control the brain metastases. So we have the good news is we have choices now, the multiple different approaches that can be used. And there's no good script for how to treat a patient. Every patient is individual, and the decision tree has to be very individualized. So we have a group that gets together at least once a week. We also often work together in clinic. We sometimes see patients together at the same time in order to make these decisions in a multidisciplinary fashion. And this is a wonderful luxury to have over here.
And tell us a little bit, let's get back to therapy just for a second. Obviously, the targeted therapies are some of the newer therapies, the immuno or immunomodulating treatments have been around for a longer amount of time. Do you suspect that these targeted type therapies are going to make big advances, say, in the next 5+ years?
Yes, absolutely, they have. I assume you're talking about the molecular targeted therapy, so the yes. therapies that target the melanoma cell rather than the immune system.
Yes.
So yes, one of those was just approved last summer, a drug called vemurafenib or zelboraf. Again, I was the one who made up the name. But this is a pill. It's a drug that targets the BRAF, or mutant BRAF, in those melanomas that have the BRAF mutation. It's approximately half of the metastatic melanomas can be treated with this drug. So that was the one that was just approved. GlaxoSmithKline is developing a drug that will probably get approved as well in the next year. We're now starting to study combinations of the BRAF inhibitor with other inhibitors to increase the time of the patient's response to therapy. And we're also studying combinations with inhibitors of different pathways so that we can overcome some of those escape mechanisms that these cancer cells ultimately develop when they're treated with a targeted therapy. There's studies combining the targeted immune therapies with the targeted molecular therapies. So those are going to be interesting as well. And I'd say overall, there's a lot going on in this field. It's very busy.
Sounds like it. You had mentioned some of the benefits and you had described the multidisciplinary care team. What else can you tell us about the melanoma program at Yale?
So we have a lot of research ongoing, starting from basic science and all the way through clinical research. It's a fairly big group. Dr. Haliban, Ruth Haliban, is a basic scientist who was recently awarded a grant from the National Cancer Institute to study melanoma specifically. She's running a lot of genetic studies and discovering new mutations on the in the melanoma cells. There's an immune program that's a component of that. There's an epidemiology program and so on. So This grant actually brings in a lot of activity. It enables us to study patient samples, and ultimately some of that information is taken back to the clinic directly. So because we have this grant, we can sequence patients' genes within the cancer cells to see if they have mutations, and sometimes that helps us to determine what approach to take. And then there are a lot of other research programs as well, particularly the clinical research program. It's a fairly big operation. We have a number of ongoing clinical trials. We're going to have some surgical trials opening up soon as well. And hopefully also trials specific for patients who've got brain metastases.
So if a patient thinks they have a problem and they have a mole that they're concerned about, what would be the best way for them to get screened or at least get that lesion evaluated? What would you recommend?
So it's typically a dermatologist. If, depending on a patient's insurance, it's not always possible to go directly to the dermatologist. But most of these moles can be biopsied by primary care physicians as well. They're actually very easy to do unless they're on an eyelid or in the face or a place where you worry about scarring. But for the most part, the biopsy is the easiest part.
If a lot of moles
are biopsied that are not melanoma, I can't tell you the percentage on that, but by far the vast majority are benign.
Dr. Harriet Kluger is Associate Professor of Medical Oncology and a member of the Yale Cancer Center Melanoma Program. If you have questions or would like to add your comments, visit yalecancercenter.org, where you can also get the podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.